Beneath the cracked clay, a seed unfurls. Leaf, bloom, life, promise. Crossing time and space. Experience Flora, a powerful story of resilience and renewal. Presented by the Australian Ballet and Bangarra Dance Theatre. This bold new dance collaboration traces the evolution of Australian flora. Journey through our living history in this unique dance experience. Visit australianballet.com.au.
You're listening to SBS News.
South Australians head to the polls on Saturday the 21st of March to elect the state's 56th parliament, tracking towards a historically poor outcome. Meanwhile, Pauline Hanson's One Nation is polling at 22%, signalling a significant presence in the vote. SBS chief political correspondent Anna Henderson spoke with One Nation candidate Cori Bernardi.
Cori Bernardi, thank you for joining SBS World News.
It's a pleasure, Anna. Nice to be with you.
What do you think is driving voters toward One Nation in South Australia?
Well, it's not just South Australia, it's nationally. I think there's a deep well of concern about how uniparty politics is failing the citizens of the country. Here in South Australia, our lives, or people feel their lives are going backwards, while the Premier trumpets, you know, all these events that he claims are a huge success. But, you know, where it matters most to people is cost of living, being able to get a house, access to healthcare, you know, government services. The metrics are all pointing in the wrong direction. And so people they want some hope. They recognise that uniparty politics is not working, and One Nation is the only viable alternative.
One of the biggest attack lines you're facing from the government is the question of what can One Nation actually deliver and what are your state-based policies? So what's your biggest state-based policy and what will it cost?
Well, I'll just say this is very lazy from the government's point of view. For the last month, they've been saying we don't have policies, despite having a comprehensive suite of policies on our website. And then they switched tack this week by saying we haven't done costings on them and we won't be able to deliver on them. That's the hallmark of a government that is completely under pressure for the first time in 4 years. They've had no effective opposition, and One Nation is now raising the right questions and taking it to them. In respect to our policy suite, it's pretty straightforward. We will abolish the South Australian voice to Parliament because we don't believe that we should have race-based laws, and South Australia rejected a national Aboriginal voice to the Parliament, and so why would we have one here? We want to make energy affordable and more reliable again, and that means getting rid of net zero. We are advocating for building a coal-fired power station because there's market failure and it is the cheapest and most reliable form of baseload energy available. We have a suite of measures that will cut cost of living, including abolishing stamp duty on insurance contracts so that it just removes the double taxation with GST. And I could go on. We have a housing policy, a forestry policy, a health policy. We even have a solution to the Premier's egregious failure on ambulance ramping. And the answer to that is we've actually spoken to the AMBOs, not the union representatives, not those hustling for a pay rise, to the ones that are on the ground and have actual answers to the problems that some of the AMBOs are facing. So where others are scared to go, we're not. We're happy to wade into it. And as to whether we can achieve it, that's going to be up to the voters when they cast their ballots tomorrow.
You framed yourself as a party representing the battlers in the community, those who are hard done by, those who can't afford housing, who need a hand up. And that's what One Nation says it's offering. But how do you reconcile that with some of the private plane travel that you've been doing during this campaign, along with Pauline Hanson, the federal leader?
Oh, we are a party for all Australians and all South Australians, and there are people who clearly are doing it tough, but I can tell you now there's a lot of other people who are recognising that they're in business, and they recognise that uniparty politics is closing down opportunities for their own children as well. But to characterise the fact that I've chartered a plane in order to get to remote areas of the state with my national leader as anything other than political outreach is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, just today we've got Anthony Albanese jetting in on $15,000 an hour government plane He's not appearing with Mr. Malinauskas on the campaign trail. He's going to do one single stop, and that's a political stop. We go to places like Cooper Pedy, where people feel disenfranchised, where Labor's had an administration running there, and it's like a fly-in, fly-out service. It doesn't work for them. We've been to Mount Gambier, we've been to Maitland, we've been to Sejuna, we've been all over the state, and unfortunately the Premier hasn't seen fit to do that, and nor has the opposition leader, quite frankly. So, you know, I won't take any lectures about outreach and dealing with voters, and I'll make no apology for going where other politicians refuse to, because I won't leave any voter behind.
And I'm sure some of the biggest issues that are being grappled with in some of those more remote places relate to the potential that petrol stations are running out of fuel. Peter Malinauskas told us earlier he's not looking at fuel rationing at the moment. He feels confident that there is going to be supply coming into the country. Do you think there does, though, need to be a dramatic and urgent intervention to deal with the lack of fuel in more remote parts of SA?
Well, here's the issue, and I live in remote regional South Australia. We depend on fuel. We have to make sure we've got fuel available. The question is, who can you believe here? Chris Bowen tells us one day we've got plenty of fuel, and then the next day he says it's a market supply shock. Anthony Albanese says one thing and Peter Malinauskas says another. They all are just saying what they think they can get away with, and we've got to get to the truth. The real failure here, though, is that we've had no strategic fuel reserve, or not one that's sufficient for needs. That's been a uni-party failure over several decades, and even the late, great General Jim Molan tried to advocate for it, but they couldn't make any traction within his own group. Pauline Hanson has been advocating it for many years, and of course they laughed at her, but she was 100% correct once again. We have failure after failure because there's no foresight from them. And the Premier is just looking to get past tomorrow. He doesn't care about what happens after that, because if he did care, he would have addressed plenty of the issues that he hasn't dealt with over the last 4 years.
So what's One Nation's answer? What would you like to do to address the realities of the fuel that's not available?
Oh, well, the simple fact is we wouldn't have closed all the refineries. We'd make sure that fuel was available. We would have had a strategic reserve pumped up as well. What we're dealing with is an unknown. Do you really trust the government who says one thing one day and another the next? We need to actually find out what the truth of this is, and we need to make sure that industry and households have fuel available. And I'll give you one example, Anna. In the place where I live, it's a large fishing port very close by. The ships there that want to go out fishing cannot fill up their tanks because there is a shortage of fuel. And this is flying in the face of what Mr. Malinauskas and Mr. Bowen and tankers coming in here filled to the brim to stock up and make sure Australians are not left in a fuel crisis like so many other crises in this country.
Can I just take you to the sort of critical, resonant heart of what One Nation has been campaigning on, it seems, in South Australia, and that is on migration. You're from South Australia. You understand that there are many regional areas that rely on workers coming in. In Adelaide, the hospitality industry says it's crying out for more workers. You want to address ramping at the hospitals. Again, you have an issue with staff shortages. How can you run on an anti-migration platform when your state is so desperate for new people to come in and fill critical jobs?
Well, Anna, to characterise as an anti-migration platform is just wrong. We have a very clear policy that mass migration is too high, and we're not discerning enough about who we let into our country. Our policy is to...
So is that the message?
No, just a moment. Our policy...
Skills? Is that what you...
Just a moment. Our policy is to have 130,000 migrants come into this country that are going to offer skills. And let me tell you where the deficiencies of the Uni Party are. A few years ago, 2023-24, something like 350,000 people were led into this country, and we were told they were skilled migrants and they were there to build houses. Well, let me tell you, 0.33%, that's less than 2,000 of them, actually had construction skills. So I won't take any rhetoric about how we're bringing in the best and brightest to build houses when, you know, you're getting a couple of thousand out of 350,000. We've had record migration in the last quarter, even though our quality and standard of living is going backwards. And when you want to talk about regional jobs, I'm a regional employer, and yes, we employ backpackers because we can't get workers, because they're all being sucked off at $90 an hour or $100 an hour to the great scam called the NDIS, where they're sitting down watching TV with people and getting paid, and that's why the NDIS is getting stacked out to $50 billion a year, and it's running up to $100 billion going forward. You have problems in this country because of government decisions. And then the government is saying, oh, well, let us make more decisions and we'll fix the problems. It's nonsense. If more migration and mass migration solved our problems in this country, we wouldn't have any left because we've let millions of people in here. So, you know, the rhetoric, again, is nonsensical. Yes, we do need workers, but we need workers, Australian domestic workers, to actually get off their butts and go out and do it rather than just get employed into the public service.
So you've had a long career in politics, and I recall when you were in the Liberal Party federally talking about potentially humanitarian intake and migration from other countries, that you did have an opinion in the past. It was perhaps important to prioritise people who came from Judeo-Christian backgrounds or countries where they had a Judeo-Christian way of life. I'm curious to know, is that still your position? Is that something that you think should be prioritised in the migration system?
Anna, my position on migration has always been crystal clear. We want to make sure that migration works in our economic, our social and our cultural interests. And that means we don't want people who are going to come here to change our country for the worst. People who don't want to obey our laws, who want to challenge our cultural and social mores. That has never changed from my position, and we've had many waves of successful migrants, and most of them have been fleeing some sort of tyranny, whether that be war in Western Europe in the 1940s, or whether it be those fleeing Vietnam and the horrors of communism. But they came here for a better way of life and for less, I guess, government in their lives, and they worked very hard provided for this country and in many respects built it. But what we have now in recent years is wave upon wave of migrants who have been brought in for political reasons, who don't really want to seem to embrace our way of life. Instead, they want to see what they can get out of the country in terms of welfare. You just have to look at the rorts and scams that are linked to some of the migrant communities in Western Sydney regarding the NDIS and others. You can keep going down this path, and most Australians will recognise that migration needs to be in our cultural, our economic and our social interests, and yet the uniparty system doesn't seem to want that to happen. So something's got to give, and let me tell you that one nation will not be for turning.
So just on that point, I mean, Pauline Hanson has criticised Muslim immigration. She's raised concerns about it. Do you think that Muslim immigration should be deprioritised?
100%. We should be looking for people who want to come here and work into this country to build it up and make it better, not for those just seeking to live in an isolated community, to be a part and to actually, as we saw today, really heckling and jeering the Prime Minister. There's something wrong. Most people seem to know what it is. So what we need to do is to put a pause on this, cut the migration levels back to 130,000 net income, those incoming, and take stock of where we are as a country.
And in doing that, are you saying that you want to see Muslim applicants for immigration to be deprioritised? Just because Pauline Hanson has said she hasn't met a good Muslim. I'm just trying to understand the position of the party.
She's never said that. But Anna, what we need to do is we need to make sure that the people that are coming to this country are the best possible people to make a contribution to our way of life. That means we need the skill sets. We don't need more welfare recipients, let me tell you that. I don't think we need more humanitarian refugees. What we need are people with skills. They're going to come here and be part of Team Australia. That's not controversial whatsoever, and we should be able to pick and choose from the best in the world because we've got a great country, we want to make it better, and we don't want to see it go the path of England, for example, or parts of Western Europe. And for those who haven't bothered to go and examine what's happening in Western Europe, you'd be horrified at the cultural change that's taking place there.
Okay, Corey Bernardi, what's your metric for success this weekend? What to you would say that One Nation has had a good campaign?
Well, I've said right through the campaign that a One Nation voice in the Parliament is a measure of success. That is our successful quotient. Whether we start with one or two or three or five, I don't know. That's up to the voters. But Just one crystal clear, strong voice for South Australians that comes from the One Nation Party is a step in the right direction. So I'm optimistic, I'm hopeful, I'm ready to give it my all, and I hope I'm going to have a few mates there to lend their arm to the wheel that is really so desperately needs to turn in this state and around the country.
Do you wish you ran in the lower house now?
I never make wishes. I have no regrets. They go to who make you are. The role I see for myself is to build up this organisation, to assist the next crop of politicians coming through, to give them whatever wisdom or experience that I can have to them, and so hopefully make them better. I'm absolutely delighted with the role I'm playing with One Nation. Let's see how it progresses in the next 24 hours and in the next 4 years, but very happy, and I'm wishing all my candidates the very best tomorrow.
Beneath the cracked clay, a seed unfurls. Leaf, bloom, life, promise. Crossing time and space. Experience Flora, a powerful story of resilience and renewal. Presented by the Australian Ballet and Bangarra Dance Theatre. This bold new dance collaboration traces the evolution of Australian flora. Journey through our living history in this unique dance experience. Visit australianballet.com.au.